Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 407 of the podcast with my wonderful guest, Afia Augustine. She is the wonderful host of a great podcast I have done as a guest fairly recently called Adultish, and I could not have enjoyed our conversation more. I'm very excited for you to dig in, so I am not going to sit here yammering. I'm going to let you get into it, and I want to wish everyone a wonderful continuation of 2021 as we plod forward with hope in our eyes. I want to say hello to you from virus-laden 87-degree Los Angeles in January. Isn't that crazy? What a weird, what a weird world.
I know.
87 How's it going? Degrees. I know. It's like hot outside. I was sweaty.
Yikes.
I mean, which is great, but also just everything is just weird.
It's just hot. Yeah, everything it's hot outside weird. And you can't even be outside.
And then you can, but then you're like, yeah, insides making everyone crazy. I don't know. But you guys are, how are you guys doing? You're about to run out of vaccines. Is that what I just read this morning?
I mean, why not? It's New York. Everyone is, you know, in the midst of all this nonsense. I mean, like, I have friends who are essential workers and nurses, and, you know, the thing to do is to watch on their stories to make sure that they're, you know, negative or positive. Like, that's literally.
Yeah.
You know, my story is now, it's like, look, guys, I'm negative still. I'm negative. I'm like, yay. So I can imagine that the vaccines are running out like, you know, candy.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that people are getting tested or getting to get those results and stuff. But for sure, do you have friends who are or who are essential workers who have gotten it and gotten over it?
Not really essential workers. I do have a couple friends of mine. Well, yeah, I have one of my friends, who's actually the producer for Adultish. He is his wife. She's an essential worker. She works at like an old age nursing home.
Mm.
She ended up, getting COVID. They are currently getting over it right now. So, she's feeling better, which is great to hear, because when he told me that she first got it, she was not feeling well at all. She was throwing up. Weird part about it is that, like, I'm sitting here like, wait a minute, did they say throwing up was one of the symptoms? Is she pregnant? And so, like, we're like, oh my goodness, does she have COVID and she's pregnant? Like, what's going on? We're like, just make sure that she's not pregnant or she has COVID, like, you know, which is it? And he's like, she's not pregnant. I was like, okay. Okay, so we know it's just COVID. And another friend of mine, I guess they lifted the ban on her job to come into the office, and she was good for a while, and then told me the other day that boom, she had COVID as well. So it's just like, oh my goodness, just everybody.
Yeah.
But here we are. They're all getting over it now, thankfully. So the hope is that they don't get it again, or, you know, they probably get the vaccine in time so that it's not like a recurrence.
It'd be so interesting to see if the switch over, knock wood, that it goes well for everyone's sake, whether you're a fan of the switch over or not. I would hope that everyone would be hoping that no one would get hurt, but it would be lovely to see, like, the kind of rapid shift that is being touted for attention to stuff like that. Like, nope, we're just gonna, as soon as we are empowered to, we're gonna, like, massively, you know, override kind of how things have been handled. I don't know. It'll be, yeah. Never has anyone, that's not fair of me to say, because I am not a history buff, and I'm definitely not an American history buff, but, I mean, this has definitely got to be an historic transition for, like, okay, you're in the shit now, dude. Like, welcome in. It couldn't be worse. Like, to try to make the fastest impact possible for the most dire circumstances. I'm sure it's up there too, like, when wars were happening and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know when wars was happening, it was just like, okay, we're running out of people. Who else could we throw in there? All right, let's,
who else can we throw in the mix?
Let's bring in some of these Australians. Aren't they like rapists and killers and stuff? Yeah, this doesn't matter. Just we're running out. Come on.
Like you're making a salad and you don't have radishes and you're like, let me check the pantry. Like, what else can
what
I throw on this war mix?
Here?
What would taste good with this? You know what? It doesn't even matter if it tastes good with it. What would make it a bigger salad?
Yes.
Oh my God. Did you ever have an interest in politics? Like, did you ever go through a phase or? Perhaps
never.
You're still in one. I don't know. But
never.
Where you were like, let me imagine myself as a congressperson.
Never have I ever. To the point where even when I was in school and my mom was very much pushing me towards doing journalism because I wanted to be an archaeologist and she just could not handle that level of weirdness from her child. even when they were like, go into journalism, I was like, I don't even want to touch politics and journalism. I know they go hand in hand and I do not want to touch that hand. Like it is
yeah.
Clammy. I don't like it. No, nope, I don't want to touch it ever.
I didn't know. Did I know that you wanted to be an archaeologist? I think that's so wonderful. And you're going to have to tell me where this was happening and that and how it was that your mom found that to be so weird.
It's okay. If you have the time, I will give it to you.
Girl, that's all we got right now. Finally, together, you and me.
Know.
This is all about
After
you.
All these years.
I want to dig in. Yes.
So honestly, this is going to sound really tragic, but it all started with, I think it's 1999's The Mummy with Brendan Fraser and Rachel.
When you said tragic, you must know, given the circumstances of the rest of the conversation we've had, I was not imagining it would start with Brenda Fraser's Mummy. That's the best tragic news I've heard all day.
Yes.
All right.
Fell in love with that movie. And I fell in love with what Rachel's character, Evie, was all about. Right? She wanted to be an archaeologist. She wanted to be an archaeologist specializing in Egyptian history. And I was at least 11 or 12 at the time. And I was like, that's what I want. Like, I love this. This seems cool. And I literally would just start when I could go to the library and I would just start like flipping through, you know, ancient Egyptian books and stuff or, you know, books about ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
And that kind of just like progressed because by the time I graduated or left junior high, I was doing projects. I was already buying books on like how to read and write hieroglyphics.
To read and write hieroglyphics.
Yes,
that's awesome.
Read and write hieroglyphics, which I'm hella rusty right now. But I had started doing that. And through high school, I just kept pursuing it. And my mom kind of thought it was like, oh, it's a little phase. It's a little weird phase, but it's a phase. And I think once I went to high school and I had this science research class, I want to say like my junior year or so, my high school science research project was about identifying the relatives of the mummies in KV5 through mitochondrial DNA and using glyphs, like using hieroglyphs to read, you know, through the text and stuff. And granted, I didn't win any money because it wasn't something that I can actually test. It was just all theory and stuff that I pulled from books. It was clear to everybody in the room, like, this girl really likes working with dead people. Like, this is her zhuzh. This is her thing. She loves it. this is her. And some of my teachers even applauded me for it because they were like, this is just a really out of the box thing to really love at your age.
Yeah.
Because of course it's like, which 16-year-old is like, ooh, I wish I could go on a dig and like touch a 35,000-year-old mummy. Me, you know?
I love it though. Wait, this was, will you put it in the context of place? Did you say like where, what city?
No, I just wanted to do ancient Egypt. So I wanted to be.
No, but I mean, like, where were you?
Oh, yes. In New York this entire time.
In New York. Yeah. Good.
In New York.
Just making sure.
Yeah, sure. So.
So it's not like you're, but I guess I'm saying that because it's not like you're in Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you were in a city that has like one of the most impressive museums of the world and history
right.
of all time. So it's
you
not
know,
like,
and
you
so
know,
it wasn't completely off, you know, that someone could want to do that.
Yeah,
because it's you know, it's in and around us. And in the program that I was in high school in Brooklyn, I was in this program at Brooklyn Tech, which is like one of the biggest high schools in New York City. It's like holds 5,000 kids,
yeah.
Which is ridiculous because a lot of people are like, wait a minute, your graduating class is like the amount of people in my entire school. And I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what to tell you. We just take up space.
I think I taught, I may have talked to someone else from Brooklyn Tech, but it is, it's like a college. It has to be like a college campus almost.
It's huge. We had like 8 floors and then like a subfloor, then another subfloor. We had like 15 gyms. It was ridiculous.
Listen, dig deep enough, you might get your own mummies.
Exactly.
Just for you.
Just
your special room of things that got dug up when they were building the sub basement.
Find all these people who were like building the Brooklyn Bridge and just walked up the street and just passed out. There we go.
That's right.
They were buried under Brooklyn.
Well, the concrete. Yeah.
So at this point in time, of course, like I'm just showing so much interest in it. And one of my sisters even told me, she's like, listen, if this is something that you really want to pursue, like for reals, I will pay for you to go to Egypt, like after your senior trip. Like I'll pay to send you there. But then here.
How many sisters do you have?
I have 2 older sisters.
Okay.
And so I have one younger sister who lives in another country.
Okay.
Yeah. So she lives in the West Indies and my sisters are all here in the States. One actually lives in Virginia right now.
Gotcha.
And so the one who lives in Virginia was the one who was like, if this is something that you really want to do, like, I'll send you to Egypt. But my mom was like, oh, no, she really likes this thing and she likes it way too much. I didn't think it would get this far.
But what harm did she feel? Did she just feel like you can't make money doing this?
It was a combination of like feeling that I wouldn't be able to make money in it. And I personally think a combination of like she would be too far away from home. Like if I have to like live in Egypt and like work out of there or travel a lot or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's a very anxious woman. So
bless that. Yeah.
So I think at that point she was kind of like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about her doing this, but I know she likes to write. Okay, listen, tell her that she needs to focus more on her writing and not on this archaeology stuff. Come on, tell her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's over, you know, in the corner doing some espionage with my sister. like, let's see if we can convince her. So actually, when I start college, I started taking archaeology courses like in college because I was just like, I really want to pursue this. But then at some point, she really didn't like it and made it very clear that she didn't like it. And I was working in the archaeology department at my college at that time, too. And I was offered this like once in a lifetime opportunity to go away and to actually go do a dig in Europe. And she was just like, you know, I don't feel comfortable sending you. And I don't know. How about you just stay home? And after that, it was just like, okay, maybe I should just focus on this writing thing. I'm just going to focus on this writing and doing that. So I went back into writing and I was mostly trying to do creative writing. But then my sisters as well were like, yeah, I don't know, the creative writing thing. You know how hard it is for like artists to like, you know, publish books and stuff. So maybe we'll have like a better
time. It's not as lucrative as like archaeology or whatever. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I'm zipping it.
That's right.
Just kidding.
You know, because, and then that was the other thing too, I think. I think it wasn't just my mom. I feel like a lot of people in my family were also very much like, you know, you'll be living on grant to grants and like,
right.
It's based on whatever's available and what's happening. So it would be a very like unstable career for you. And they're like, but you really love writing. And I mean, you can really take that somewhere. I mean, if anything, you can always become a teacher or something, which I'm kind of like, I don't like teachers being like the last resort job in this situation, but okay.
Yeah, I know. You're so right about that, that there is this sort of sense of like that you either want to be a teacher, so you become a teacher, or you want to be something else. And when that doesn't work out, you just have to teach whatever it is you failed at.
Exactly.
Like, that's a super bummer way to look at things.
Bum way. So
yeah.
I eventually just started taking more writing courses and finally moved my major over to journalism. And yeah, I didn't even, and that, the funny part about all of that, graduated, and that was the year where the market was just like for like all publishing and they were just not hiring people. And so I was just like working out of a craft store at the end of all of it. So it was just like all of this, just like put beads in a bag and direct people to where construction paper was.
Oh, I have put so many beads in so many bags. So I do relate.
Oh,
I do relate.
The only good thing out of that is I learned how to make jewelry, and that.
And you make beautiful jewelry.
And that's what I do. I make that on the side, hoping someday, at some point in time, that it could be, you know, a contributing factor into my lifestyle, so I don't have to work a 9-to-5. But it's a work in progress. But man, standing behind that counter and counting Swarovskis into little baggies was like,
oh my god. I mean, I have just done the exact same thing. I cannot tell you. I mean, when you said that, I had a visceral flashback to being in Flagstaff, like pulling out like very specific, like Austrian crystals, like, okay, do you want this peach color? Oh, no, you want the peach pink color.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Like,
yes.
Very, very, very strong
memories.
Oh, and
in 2AB, do you happen to have 3AB? I want to see the difference.
Like, yeah.
Ma'am. It's yeah. the same sparkle.
The gauge.
Crap.
The gauge. How do you feel? I mean, listen, the way that you described your enthusiasm and the way that you described it, like, you have to tell me, but like, I kind of still want that for you.
A lot of people do. You're not.
I mean, you know, the way you describe it, I'm like, oh,
yeah.
This is sounding really good to me for
it's
you.
Crazy. So
not to say like Egypt is the easiest place to go be right,
not,
you know, right now.
Not at
so,
all.
But
I want to say like within the last year and a half, I've had people tell me that a couple of my friends who know the story or, you know, when they're hearing me retell it for like the first time in a long time. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt that I got tattoos that are all like hieroglyphs that I've, you know, drawn and gone to a tattoo artist and was like, please put this on my body. So I have, you know, hieroglyphs on my body for the mere fact and my commemoration of my love of this.
So I've had people
like, hey, wouldn't you want to? I mean, it's not too late. And I'm like, I do not want to be that 40-year-old person now getting into archaeology. Like, is this a bone? I can't tell. Like, I don't want to. It's like I'm so far out of the gate right now.
Right.
That I feel like it would just be so much for me to try and catch up and get to enjoy all that exuberance with all that vigor and energy. It's like
right.
My knees feel like, you know, those bones in the ground. Like I'm cracking and cracking, you know, cracking my knees.
Yeah.
Like, listen, I
hear you on all that. Is there ever, I mean, I guess you've probably had this exact conversation offline with other friends, but is there a version of the enthusiasm that like connects you to it, like museumology? Boy, I know that's not the right word.
I know
deeply that's not the right word, but is that, or does that sort of equate with like teaching in terms of like, oh yeah, if I'm going to be connected to the topic, it would be too hard to be more peripheral than like being boots on the ground.
Yeah. For me,
or boots on the bones.
Like,
don't put your boots on the bones. That's important. You can't step on them.
You can't step on them. That's artifacts. You can't. You gotta do some carbon dating. Figure out how old they are.
That's right.
No, I mean, after that happened, and I found that I did love writing as much as I loved the concept
good.
Of archaeology going into it.
Okay.
Like, I did love writing, but mostly creative writing. Like,
right.
Journalism stuff is cool. One of my first gigs in entertainment writing was at a online place where I had to write about Teen Mom and having to write like Mountain Mama and this, you know, Olive Garden loving, you know, 16-year-old like writing. I have to memorize like all the minutiae of these little girls' lives and seem enthusiastic about it all the time.
Yeah.
And then at some point, I also eventually started getting pigeonholed into like the kind of things that I could write there. So I didn't care too much for that. But creative writing for me was just I would get like the same feeling almost like in that ASMR kind of way, like if I thought about archaeology and stuff. So when I was really invested in creative writing, I had a moment. My muse, she ran away. I don't know what happened. I don't know what I said to her. I don't know what fight I accidentally picked with this muse, but she upped and ran away for a while. As of late, she's starting to come back. I think she bought a overnight bag a couple weekends ago. And
yay!
We're working on things.
I love
it. We're working it out. You know, we're going to go to therapy together and, you know, figure it out. But I missed having that level of enthusiasm. So it's slowly coming back to me. And as I'm starting to write for myself more a little bit, here and there, I'm starting to feel good about it. So,
oh, good. Yeah. All right, hear me out on this.
Absolutely.
I'm going to connect a bunch of things all together.
Yes.
And I will give you what you should do with the rest of your life. No, not at all. But I will. I know. That's what our MASH game is for. That's what our MASH game is
yes.
for. We'll unspool all kinds of crazy alternate universe stuff in our MASH game later. But here's where I'm going with this. Okay.
Yes.
So I love that it was this, you know, adorable, funny, like genuine, fun movie that kind of like ignited it for you. Mm-hmm. I will say that my first experience with the sort of concept of ancient Egypt in any kind of, mm-hmm. of like a creative entertainment type way. Mm-hmm. And I think I've brought this up on the podcast before, which seems weird because it's totally random. But there's this author that I loved when I was a kid / young adult named Zilpha Keatley Snyder.
Okay.
And she had this book. I think it won like the Peabody or the something, the whatever, the like the Newbery Award winner for children's literature.
Yes.
She had a book called The Egypt Game, and it took place in like kind of an urban setting with like a few different neighborhood kids, and somehow they ended up like it was just very relatable to me and I think to many, many children. But that, you know, it was like somebody's I'm hard pressed and I'm not going to look it up on my phone because I feel like always that ends up going
I know,
like
that's me.
Distracting and takes too much time. Yeah. But these kids end up like, you know, sort of, you know, you pull the plywood board that's loose aside into the backyard of the old shop. So, and the backyard is like, has all these old pieces of junk and this and that and a mannequin and da da da. And they find this like old bust of Nefertiti and they end up sort of creating this alternate universe where they come. It's like a club where they like come. They're all, you know, it's a few different kids of different ages and different ethnicities, and they kind of create this little club where they become really kind of fascinated by and obsessed with the whole idea of ancient Egypt and the gods and hieroglyphics and all that kind of stuff. And it's got a little bit of a, you know, turns into a little bit of a thriller in that adorable way that, you know, good, great kind of young person literature can.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm putting all these things together, and now I want you to like be like write a great young person's book that is inspired out of your love of Egyptology, and then you will make millions of dollars because like they'll want to make it into a Netflix miniseries and you'll get to go and like on location wherever they shoot it. This is my new thought.
Awesome.
And go.
You say that?
No. No.
One of the novels that I had started working on before my muse ran away was a young adult book set in present day and ancient Egypt that was going to be like a sci-fi fantasy.
This is happening.
Almost time traveler aspect thing there. Like
this
a cosmic
is happening.
Connection across generations.
No, this is happening. Your muse is back to stay.
Yeah.
I'm 100% sure. I'm so excited about this.
I was just trying to.
You may have overloaded her.
And she was just like, listen, ma'am, pick one story at a time.
She needed a minute.
Focus
yeah.
on everything. You want me to write young adult, but then you want me to write erotica? Like, what do you want?
I hear you.
She left.
Well, guess what?
Too much.
She's going to be really glad she came back because are you going to tell me it's a coincidence that I just
yes.
like. Said
yes.
all that.
As
she just
you
came
started
over,
talking,
she,
like
she,
I was
she,
taking a
like,
deep breath. Like, how did she know?
Yeah, she DM'd me while I was talking to you and planted that seed in my head.
That's right.
That's how dedicated she is to being back. She's channeling through me
yes.
now to be like, hey, I'm here. Let's get to work.
Yep.
That's so crazy. Okay, yep. Now I'm super excited about it. Okay. So did you, going back to, and I don't mean to pry in any kind of way, but... Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself, and I'm Morgan Rhodes, and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Obviously, you know, you're able to describe your mom as being maybe a little worried about mm-hmm. your welfare and all that kind of stuff and wanting to make sure that you're safe or wanting to make sure you're nearby. Was that the kind of relationship that you and your sisters had? Like, were you a very close family? Was it sort of female forward?
Yes.
You know, because, you know, there are some kids who would be like, why don't you go fuck yourself? I'm
yes.
going, or I'm going to do this. You're, yeah. you know, the fact you don't want me to do it makes me want to do it more.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not the relationship that you had with it as you struggled
no.
through that.
Funny enough, we were just talking to my mom last night about the dynamics of our relationship and like how we grew up. But overall, like, we were all pretty close. I was the youngest, and I think that was also one of the many reasons why I was a bit of the black sheep in a way. Like, I would, my sisters are like, I want to be, you know, I want to go to college and be a doctor. And the other one's like, I want to go to college and, like, I don't even know what she wanted to do, maybe do architecture or something. And then here I am, I'm like, I want to play with dead people. And it's like, who is she? What is she? Who is she and why is she here? But like, I'm 7 and 8 years. There's a 7 and 8 year difference between me and my sister. So I was the baby.
Okay. Yeah.
So when I came, like, it was very much like, I was like the tag along kid. So we were close where it's like they had to watch me. But then also we were close because my mom at some point in time, when she started working different jobs, she would like work evening jobs. And so we had to just always make sure that we were all home and like taking care
sure.
of each other.
Sure.
So we were pretty close. I mean, like I said, I was the oddball. My middle sister was like the lawyer. That's what we used to call her because she would like argue a point tooth and nail.
Uh-huh.
And then like my eldest sister was kind of just like the cool boss. Like, she would just sit by the side, just not say anything, but know everything. And
uh-huh.
just what's going on in that brain of yours? And she's like, you will yeah. never know. Like, she's one of those.
Yeah.
So
and then you said you have one younger sister,
yes,
so I assume that's maybe a half sister, perhaps, or
half sister. Yes, so my
gotcha,
father's
gotcha.
Daughter, who I
gotcha.
For whatever reason he named her after me. So there are two.
Oh wow!
Kids. Yes.
Oh my gosh! How much younger than you is other Rafia?
She is 3 years younger than me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So you really he?
It was yeah.
It was a quick turnaround.
It was just like a shock. because we came to the States. So my family were originally from Trinidad, West
okay.
Indies, Caribbean, boop, boop.
Yeah.
So we came here. My dad was supposed to come. And then I don't know, I guess he and my mom like didn't see eye to eye about something.
Mm-hmm.
And he went back to his home country of Grenada. So while he was there, he got with this lady. And then next thing you know, like, because I came up here when I was like turning three-ish, about three. And next thing you know, like, he's sending my mom like a letter in the mail, and it's like, hey, I have a little girl and her name's Afia. And we're just all like, why would you do this? Like, you have a 3-year-old named Afia. So we were like, but we just.
I don't think he's the only person who's done that. I feel like that happens.
You want to hear?
Isn't that yeah.
crazy? I started working at this job and at this place in the Bronx, and my coworker and I, we go out for a drink at this queer bar. And we're getting to know each other a little bit better, and we do
yeah.
so over a drink. And as we're talking, I'm like, man, our lives are so similar. And I was like, you know, my dad named his daughter after me. And she's like, what? My dad
no.
named his daughter after
me. Oh my God. You probably said that as like, well, here's where the similarity ends. Top this. I was named out like thinking you're so saucy. Like, guess what? You're not going to be able to relate to. That is bonkers.
I can top your dysfunction. My
oh
dad
my
named
God.
After me. And she was like, I can match yours. So we were
that
both sitting there like,
nuts.
Why do we have little sisters named after us?
It is this sort of strange, like, guilt / love / missing. Like, there's this weird, it's like, you think it's a tribute to me, but really, how would a young person not feel replaceable? Like, there's just such a weird, like, disconnect between the intention and the perception between with that particular choice, you know?
And to get it from the side of the person who's being named is like, are you using me to fill the void of this person?
Yes. Well said.
You know, it's what is your explanation and, you know, the intent behind it and the meaning or, you know, how it's being received. So I mean, I met her when she was how old is she? I think she was 11. Yeah. She came and spent a summer with us when she was 11. And it was a crazy summer, but it was something to really watch, because we had to find a way on like how to call.
I was going to ask my next question. Please tell me that neither one of you had to be Fifi.
No, but actually that is my nickname that they call me, which as I got older, I was like, why are people calling me what they call poodles? But I get it. Sure. You know. And that's only within like,
I really put my foot in it, didn't I?
No. It's all good. That's only really for famine and when they want to be cheeky.
Listen, if it's a term of affection, if it's a term of affection, for sure. If it becomes like a diminutive, I guess that's where I was going with it, is that if you're treating it as a diminutive of like, you don't get to be the real Afia, you have to be the like the diminutive of Fifi. But I mean, it's kind of adorable if you're, you know.
Hey, they call me a poodle. But for the most part, they just say Fi. Other
also
people
adorable.
Call me Fifi, which is, I'm like, okay, that's cute. When I know that you're not trying to call me after, you know, trying to call.
Should I call you Af? Af. Hey, Af.
Stop it.
No. Is Afia, is that a name that had been in your family? Does it mean something? Where did Afia come to meaning? It's a beautiful Afia, name.
Afia, my mom named me that because she said that she saw it like in an African naming book. And that it meant last born of the last born. And she is the last of four of her mother's children. So, and I'm the last of her three. So,
and then your dad was like, I'm going to make that the most ironic meaning of a name.
Yeah.
What could I do to make it the most ironic choice? Last of the last, the second last.
Yes. So... I mean, and the great thing about that is my mom tells me that's that meaning, right? And then as I start to get, you know, as I get older, we're walking about and we're going to fabric stores because she's like a seamstress by trade, essentially. And we're sewing in fabric stores because she wants to make curtains or something. And there's a Ghanaian woman, or I don't know how to say it, if it's Ghanaian or Ghanaian, it always trips me up. But a woman from Ghana who was handling the fabric. And she's like, oh, your pretty daughter, what's her name? And I say, my name's Afia. And she's like, oh, are you from Ghana? And I'm like, no. And she's like, that's like a name in Ghana. I'm like, is it? She's like, yeah. She's like, were you born on Friday? I'm like, no, Saturday. She's like, oh, okay. Uh-oh. So she says, in Ghana, Afia is the name given to a girl born on Friday.
Oh.
And every time I encounter someone from Ghana, they immediately ask me if I'm from Ghana. So it's gotten to a point now, as soon as I see I say my name, and the person lets me know they're from Ghana and they open their mouth, I go, listen, nope, I'm not from Ghana. I wasn't born on Friday. And they're like, you sure? I'm positive. So I've gotten that. So like, I have a UPS delivery man. We had a whole chat about it.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
He saw the name on the package and he's like, Afia. And I'm like, yes. And I saw the excitement. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm from the West Indies. I was born on Saturday. I'm not from Ghana. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. What a barrage. You really have to hit him over the head with it. Now, that being said,
yes.
Number one, I've heard wonderful things about Ghana.
Yes.
Number two, it has introed you quickly to people from Ghana in like you quickly find out about someone because they are prompted to tell you a little bit about themselves by virtue of like recognizing your name. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Question mark. Like
it is,
you know.
It is, because the delivery guy, he starts talking to me about, there is a famous singer in Ghana named Afia. And he's like, you should listen to her songs. They're really cool. And then my mom is like, yeah, I love Afro beats. I'm going to go listen to it now. And she like turns around and goes away. I'm like, thank you, sir. He's like, you got to go visit Ghana. If you have to go to any country in Africa, go to Ghana first. So, you know, so every time now he comes by, he'll tell my mom like what Ghana looks like and where she'll have to go. And, You know, so they're planning this trip. I don't know. I don't know when they're planning this trip. So I'm glad that my name, you know, created this vacation that my mom's taking at the request of our UPS delivery man.
You're bringing people together. Bringing Always. People together since, I guess, you were born. Well, yes, yeah, exactly. Just about. Just about. Oh,
since
my God. Okay.
Right on that birth certificate.
So I think it's, first of all, I have to also say that Brooklyn Tech offering up anything that connects you with archaeology that early is a hell of a lot more than I can say about my, you know, little public school in Tucson. Like, God forbid, you know, there just wasn't, you know, it was like, how cool they could afford the worms we're dissecting in biology this year. Like,
ugh. Yeah, Brooklyn Tech, it was a behemoth. I mean, it still is. I guess as I've gotten older now, it looks smaller. But first and foremost, it was at that time when I was vying to get into Brooklyn Tech, it was one of the three specialized high schools in New York City. So you had to take a test in order to get into one of these three schools. And based on your ranking on that test, it would determine how many schools you got into. So technically,
thank God we're placing still lots of importance on just the test taking process. As we know, it's the most reliable thing in the world,
right?
Oh boy.
So,
but you were a good test taker.
I was a good test taker, yes.
And yeah, lucky
I
us.
I actually got into two schools. I got into the Bronx High School of Science, which was kind of like ranked second, and Brooklyn Tech, which was ranked third, but I mean, it was still a specialized high school. So I was just like, okay, it's the third of like the best though. So like,
oh,
still
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
So I got into those two schools and my mom was like, Bronx, hell no. You know how long you're going to be on a train trying to get to school? That's like 2.5 hours. And then you have to wake up at 5 o'clock to go stand on the train station in the platform in the snow in New York City. Hell
I mean,
no.
She has a point. That all sounds pretty
and
hard.
I was like, hey, I'm cool with it. I'll stay right here in Brooklyn. So we stayed there. And then on top of that, my teacher, she just filled out applications. I tell you, teachers, some of them, you got to love them. She was just like, I love this girl and she's smart. And I love all the other kids in my class and they're smart. She literally enrolled us in like a program at Brooklyn Tech without even telling us. She just like filled out applications for us.
Oh, wow.
And it was just like, hey, you got accepted into like this accelerated science group. And it was like, huh? When did I apply for this? And I mean, it was an experience. There were its ups and its downs because, of course, it's high school. You're going through puberty. I like boys. I don't know if I like boys. Ah, all this stuff is happening. But
sure,
the program itself basically kind of there was 50 kids. They put 50 kids together for all 4 years for certain science and math classes. So we were in a school within the school.
Okay.
And so we were like 50 separated from the other 4,945 students or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience because we actually got to build like lasting friendships with some people. Like one of my best friends is, you know, from Tech and from Pulse, which was the program. But it was disgusting because we saw the same people all the time. Like we could not mingle with other students because of our classes.
Oh, no.
So it literally was like solitary confinement with 49 other folks. And then
like you were going to boarding school inside a town of like all these other people.
You know, so it was like, whenever we actually got to meet the others, we called it Gen Pop. We're like, oh my God, we got a class in Gen Pop. Do you have science in Gen Pop? Yes.
How exotic.
You know, you get to meet new kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the only times you mingled with the rest of the school was like gym, lunch, and what was it? Maybe history? That was about it. Not even. I think only when we got to like junior year, we started getting more open classes. Language, that was the other class.
Was there a sense at all in the Gen Pop of like, oh, look at the, oh, I guess you guys are really special.
They could smell Pulse off of us. It's like, oh, they're the Pulse kids. Oh, they think they're so smart. We're like, we don't want to be so smart. We want to be like you. We want to be with the rest of you. We're not.
I was talking to somebody else about that. It might have been like, oh gosh, I can't remember. It was one of my boys of summer. Who was a Chicago kid. I'm feeling Open Mike Eagle, but I could be wrong. But this idea of like the downfall of the GATE program and the Pulse program of like, you know, like, yeah, we're going to single you out. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, it will suck. Like,
yes.
It does not feel like a reward. And, you know, just that sort of like, oh, that's not, we didn't think this through because there's definitely some shitty bullying, like, and you know, you sort of understand it on the other side too. It's like, it sucks to be a person told you're not special and this group is special. So precisely. It sort of incites shittiness on all sides, you know, it can, you know.
Absolutely. But then you have
that's why all the Harry Potter kids just had to go really far away to like a mountain castle. And even still, there's bullying. So never mind.
There was still bullying there. Exactly.
Did you have, this is such a specific, like very teenage question, but because I went to a school that had two schools inside of it as well. There was a certain like, because again, hormones going crazy, there would definitely be like a, oh, I keep seeing this person and we might as well be in different world. Like, I don't know who it is. Our paths cross in the hallway. You know, was there a sense of that for you? Like people that weren't part of those 50 that you were like, now who? Oh, no, gone.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, may never see them again.
Yes.
And we go to the same school.
Yes. I mean, there were times where, I mean, we had to, when I say me and some of my girlfriends, we had to just find people's schedule because we were like so tired. We're like, oh my God, did you see that guy? Yes. Okay. We have to stand in front of 3 and 3. Okay. Synchronize our watches. Wait. He passes. 4:52, unless it's a snow day when he's getting a little bit late. Come on, guys.
I miss that though. I miss the sleuth work. I miss the like,
so much.
Speaking of pulse, I miss the like racing pulse, the like crush stance of like, I do miss that. I miss like small things feeling important for the most part. I'm glad is over, but but there are definitely moments where I'm like, oh God, like
I miss those.
That's a thrill. It's dopamine. It's like that adrenaline and dopamine rush of, you know, oh, I think if we time it right, faster. You know, we're gonna miss it.
Just start running. Throw your pencil. Just like,
yeah.
Like you're running after your pencil. I'm sorry. And you're like, oh my God, I touched his leg. Did you see that? Like one of those things. And then
now
you had, like what you said, where you'll see a guy and it's like, I don't know if I'll ever see him again because I don't.
Yeah.
Was it a fluke? Was it a substitute today? I don't know.
Did I dream this? Did I imagine them? Did I never even? Yeah. Yeah. When you just mentioned in passing, and we don't have to dwell on it if you don't want to, but you mentioned in passing that like, do I like guys? Do I not like guys? Like, where's, you know, the confusing, where's my head out? Where's, you know, do I have to know that right now? Kind of time happening as well with everything else going on. Was that something that you did kind of have to like figure out or feel the pressure to figure out?
Not really
at that time.
Not at that time. I mean, like I would be called as like, I guess, a cis hetero female. Mm-hmm. Just making sure I'm using the right terminology.
Listen, just throw them all in there and right. One of them is PC.
Cis hetero female. However, I will say that I am, and I know I'm making this up, I don't know if it's real, but I was like, I'm queer curious because like
you're not making that up.
So in high school, I absolutely knew that I liked boys. But the funny thing is I didn't talk to a lot of boys at all, or I wouldn't bring boys home. Or I wouldn't talk to my mom about boys. I think my mom is kind of like one of those older parents who's kind of like, I don't think I need to talk to her about sex. I think she should just know. So we would never sit down and talk about boys. But she also didn't hear me talk to my sisters too much about boys, or if I did talk to my sisters about boys, I was like, don't tell mommy anything.
Oh,
so
sure.
So she wouldn't hear anything. So at some point she thought that maybe I was queer or lesbian.
Got it.
And she was like, I don't know. And then it didn't help that like at this point too, I was also just buying boxer briefs because I just felt that they were better than shorts to wear at home. So I would just wear boxer briefs and like tidy whitey.
We were wearing boxer briefs to school when I was very young. Like there was a serious phase
of
in
just,
the
yeah
90s. It's like in the 90s at some point you would wear like Gap boys
boxers,
colorful boxers, and like maybe some long underwear underneath those, and then like combat boots. It was a wild eclectic time.
Wild time.
Like a little bit of anything goes somehow. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Somehow. But so she's seeing that, and then I'm not talking about boys, and she's like, oh my God, I don't know. Is she Kay? I don't know. And she would say this to my sister, who would then say it to me, and I would just like laugh, like, I can't believe this lady. This is funny. But in all honesty, I mean, I would talk to my sister about like, I find women attractive. And even to this day, I still talk to her about like, I don't know how far I'd go if with a woman, but I don't see myself being like grossed out by being with a woman. You know, like I don't know that feeling that super hetero women feel where it's like, ugh, gross, another woman. I'm like, no, she's beautiful. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I would love to go on a date with a woman and just go on a date, like, you know.
Yeah.
But
it really can be a you don't necessarily know. One of my best friends in I knew her from fourth grade on, but we became close in didn't really know each other that well, but kind of had some classes together in junior high. And then by high school, we ended up getting really close. And then I lived with her for part of college. And, you know, she's just very, very important to me. But she had never like kissed a girl or anything. Mm-hmm. And she was like sort of like mildly fascinated that I was just all over the place and just didn't, you know, it was just like not like I didn't even really talk about it. But it was not, you know, it wasn't even something that she hadn't like the curio. I mean, I think I'm repeating her. I'm not like positing an idea of what I think she thought. She was like, yeah, I was always curious, but like, I wasn't even like curious enough to ask you about it. Really. It was just like, that was you. And I thought it was great. And like, but I didn't think to myself, is that also me? Mm. And, you know, she just had a series of long-term relationships, with guys, and she married a guy in her 20s, and she was sort of, you know, like it was kind of turned into a platonic marriage. Mm-hmm. And the a girl that I think might have been one of her roommates, they just completely fell madly in love. And she's like, oh, I, you know, in her late 20s was like, oh, I have to leave my marriage, and I'm in love with this woman. And she's never been with a man since. Like, she's now been happily married to a woman for like a decade. Yes. And but she's like she was like, I didn't think of myself as bi ever. Yeah. And then when I fell in love with the first woman I fell in love with, mm-hmm. like I was gay. Like I just it was sort of like, oh, I'm gay. So you just, you know, who knows? It's like, you never know. And this girl totally seduced her, by the way. it wasn't anything she was after.
Yeah, she doesn't know it yet.
Yeah, very much so. I really think it was. Because I think she was like shocked. Like, what are you doing? Wait, don't stop. There was a real sort of moment of like, uh-oh, you know? So we're just, our bodies and our minds are so fascinating.
They are.
And you're going to explore all of that from ancient Egypt to present day.
That's
in
right.
Your young adult sci-fi fantasy wonderful book that your
Absolutely.
Muse is going to be showing up for. I can't wait. Did you get into, were you a pretty good kid in terms of like, you weren't going out? And I mean, I'm sure the opportunities abound in New York if they abounded in Arizona to party and stuff.
So many opportunities. And in fact, that was what we were discussing with my mom last night, that we did not take pleasure. We did not take any of these liberties with these opportunities. We were explaining to my mom, because I don't think she fully comprehended that, like, we grew up in a strict household. So my mom was a very strict woman, and it was generational. So her mother was very strict with her. So with us, she was also strict. And so my mother, again, she's raising, you know, three young girls by herself in New York City, you know, so she's in constant like attack mode. Right. So
she had never, I'm sorry, I'm very bad at that. But and she moved to New York for the first time already having kids.
Yeah. So she had been.
Yeah. I mean, that's overwhelming.
Yes. So, you know, she came to the States before, like, you know, came around, saw it, and then came back. And for the first time being here, it's like with she first came with me, and then she sent for my two sisters like 6 months later. So,
that's intense.
Had to establish work and. Yeah. You know, get a place and all that other good stuff all on her own.
Wow.
So, again, she was very much like a guard dog with
three girls,
you know? And,
yeah.
And two of them were already like 11 and 12. So they're already in the midst of that preteen heading into their teens and, you know, a young child under, you know, 10. So, you know, we did not do much. So, and she would only let us do things with people that she wholeheartedly trusted. On top of that, which was another hurdle, like making my mom trust you completely. So I know from my sisters, anytime that they did want to go out, they typically would go out So like if they were going out to clubs or dances or something, it would be with my mom's friends who would maybe be the DJ or like the people supplying equipment or something to these events. Mm. And so they would be, you know, responsible for making sure my sisters are okay. And they also would act like guard dogs and, you know, older brothers like, who are you talking to, that little girl? Move away from, you know, so it was just,
right.
It was one of those situations for them. And then for me, I didn't really go out much because as my sisters got older and they got more rebellious, I would see the consequences of their rebellion. I was like, I sure. do not want those consequences to happen
yeah,
to me.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do that. And if I did want to do anything, like I literally had to bring friends over to the house for my mom to kind of vet them and be like, I trust this one. Okay, sure. You two can go to the movies. I don't like that one in the corner. So I think you need to just... don't go anywhere with that one. Not that one. So.
Can you imagine? I mean, being a parent, trying to use your best judgment with stuff like that, yeah. because I feel like, you know, talk about a cross section of friends I had. I had like the friends that were awful around my parents just because they were so awkward because they weren't like a kid like I was who had been raised around adults, you know, mm-hmm. like my dad's friends, like kind of, you were saying your mom had adult friends mm-hmm. that would like look out for you guys. Like, you know, I was so used to being around adults, but I had friends who were perfectly great kids who just were very uncomfortable and like awkward around adults. Mm-hmm. And they would be considered the ones you couldn't trust because they weren't like, you know, super friendly and like well spoken yeah. around. But then like half of the kids that are well spoken around adults are like, they figured that out because they're manipulative.
Yes, you know what I mean?
Like,
exactly.
Those are the ones that are like, yes, I will have her home. Of course, ma'am.
Sure.
Absolutely. Wouldn't touch a hair on her head.
That's, yeah.
You know,
and
it's
like,
yeah, don't trust that one.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to go smoke pot at this place over here.
Exactly.
I got the change of clothes and the spritz in the bag.
100%. It's just like, it's, and you know, and that doesn't mean that you can't be a well-spoken good kid. It's just like, it feels like it's anyone's guess. It's
yes.
anyone's best guess.
Exactly.
Could go anyway. Oh
so,
yeah, yeah.
That's what it
did. You ever
was.
Have? Did you have a time after, like, into early adulthood? Did you ever have a sort of like, oh my god, this is all the stuff I pent up when I was younger,
oh
or was
god.
It just like a smooth transition?
I did not feel that until I got divorced. This is so ridiculous. Like I literally did not have that until I got divorced. Like the entire time, you know, it was just like, all right, I'm still gonna just. Be here for my mom, help my mom, you know, just not do anything to just get on her nerves, whatever. Because at this point, mm-hmm. like I'm in my 20s, but I'm still living at home. And, you know, my mother's one of those under my house, under my rules type of person, of course, is all people would be. So I still didn't do too much. And then it was literally from being at home to just getting married and being with my now ex-husband. So I didn't even have a transition where I was like on my own and got a chance to be on my own and do whatever I wanted. It was home, and then marriage, home. And it wasn't until literally like my 30th birthday, my good friend Vincent, who you know, was like,
yes.
We're going to make you smoke pot for your 30th birthday. I was like, oh, really?
You're kidding. Let me tell you, that's a tough, yeah. Oh, I'm glad it was a good experience.
You know,
there's nothing like
tequila.
We're going
like,
to make you smoke pot. Yeah, that could have gone the other way. Like
yes.
for me, I would have been like, and I would have had a nervous breakdown. I mean, I did tons of drugs, but like in the situation where someone else made the decision for me, I'd be like, I'm freaking out. It's my birthday and I'm freaking out. Thanks, guys, because I'm freaking out right now. I can't feel my feet. I can't feel my face. I'm glad that it went well. I'm glad that
it went well. Day. I was like, all right. After that, I just started doing a lot more things that I never got a chance to do. And that's when that whole moment. I got it out and I was like, okay, now I can relax and sit with a calm mind and figure out my next steps in life.
There you go. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey everyone, it's I, John Hodgman of the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
And I, Elliot Kalin of the Flophouse podcast.
And we've made a whole new podcast, a 12-episode special mini-series called iPodius, in which we recap, discuss, and explore the very famous 1976 BBC miniseries about ancient Rome called I, Claudius. We've got incredible guests such as Gillian Jacobs, Paul F. Tompkins, as well as star of I, Claudius, Sir Patrick Stewart, and his son, non-Sir Daniel Stewart.
Don't worry, Dan, you'll get there someday.
iPodius is the name of the show. Every week from MaximumFun.org for only 12 weeks. Get them at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am going to do this MASH game with you. I'm very excited about it. That time flew by, as I knew that it would. But I have had you almost an hour. We have not even launched into this yet. So let us do some play here with the MASH. For our first category, I don't think this will surprise you in the least. I would like to give you the opportunity to go in time, forwards or backwards, to a place. You are in a safety bubble. You can be there for as little or as long as you want, whenever you want. Three places and times that you would love to kind of see, spend time in, bear witness to, solve a mystery, whatever you want. Three places.
Three places. Okay, so backwards and forwards. So, of course, ancient Egypt. Oh, another one. Another good one for me would be ancient Rome.
Great.
And mostly because Bridgerton made it pop into my head again. So Regency England, so that far back.
Oh my God. I've totally been watching that as well.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, but that man is extremely handsome.
He is yummy.
He's a very delicious young man.
Very yummy.
Like, it's a little uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they're just a certain type of, I feel like a lot of the time I don't necessarily feel it with like the dreamboats that everyone loves. Like, whether it's like, I'm not a Gosling. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a Pattinson, you know, I've never was a Brad Pitt. I've never
or
been
DiCaprio.
Like a, I've never was a DiCaprio. I was usually leaning into the funny or the like, you know, but like, yeah, certain charismas. But anyway, like the of late, it really has just been like Idris Elba. Everyone gets it. Male, female, black, white, any other color. We all get it.
Yeah.
This is kind of that. I mean, he's just, but like, he's so much prettier than I usually, but he's so cute.
He is. He's just really.
But he just knows it. I mean, you know, he's got all his little looks. He's got his raised eyebrow. Like, he's got his like,
it's,
you know,
the twinkle
his
in
stuff.
His eye. But it's, I don't know. It's the.
Yeah, he's real cute. But also his friend that he boxes with is also.
Oh, yes.
Very, very, very attractive
handsome.
Man.
Yeah.
Very attractive man.
I actually told myself that too when we were watching it. I was like, did you see his boxing partner? He was something to look at too.
Yeah. They've got a pretty great cast going on that. I mean, it's like, it's definitely like eating candy, but it's fun.
Yep.
I've been enjoying it. I think I'm like, might only be like three episodes in, but I feel like a lot has happened.
Oh,
so maybe I'm deeper in.
When you get to the fourth episode, then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Off.
Regency England, love it. For the same reasons, love it. Okay, next category, let's do three fictitious places where it would be fun to have like a second home that we can sort of teleport you to.
Three.
And it could be like fictitious in the sense of like the Brooklyn of blank story, or, you know, but it could also be like the moon of Endor in Star Wars. Like, it could be. It could be sort of anything you want, as grounded or as fantastic, Cole, as you want.
Three fictitious place to vacation.
Mm-hmm. We're going to give you a second home there. That will be where your mansion, apartment, shack, or house will
be. Okay, I would actually love to live in Rivendell.
Great.
From Lord of the Rings.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to go with, because of the mummy, I'm going to go with Hamunaptra, which is the place where Anuksunamun was born in the mummy. To go with that.
Love it.
And oh, you know what I would like to live, even though it was a terrible thing and I'm gonna be really terrible about describing it. No, actually not. The name of that movie, Skyscraper with the Rock, right?
Okay.
Okay, and that actual skyscraper, even though like it was blown up and all that other good stuff. But like something high tech fancy like that, like in
Got it.
Crazy Rich Asians, like that
estate.
Yeah.
Okay. I get you. This is totally random, but I feel like you're going to enjoy this tidbit. I will say that I, for one day, when I first came to LA, I don't even think I had moved here yet. I registered with the temp agency, as you do, had no money, zero money. And I ended up for one day working at this management company that I cannot remember what the name of it was. Oh, The Firm. It was called The Firm. I don't know if it still exists, but it was like a high-end, like a superstar management company. The fact that I was just like some random temp that had just come down from San Francisco and that they felt comfortable enough with my resume that they were like, we're going to have you answer phones for like a really hot shit manager for because her assistant called in sick today. But I got sent there and I was working for this manager who managed a bunch of very famous people. The only in-person visit that I got from one of the clients of this manager was Brittany Murphy. She was so sweet and adorable and funny, and she offered me a job like that day because we got along so well. She was like, do you want to come be my assistant? And I was like, I'm trying to do what you do kind of, but that's so embarrassing to admit. Like it was just, and then she passed away like not that long afterwards. And I felt so lucky to have met her, but it was also such a weird punch in the stomach. Like she had become real to me in a way that she never would have been had that not brief period. But then it was like, oh, this is awful. Anyway, but the point of the story is that another one of her clients was Brendan Fraser. And he called, like he had called in for her. He was so nice, so funny, so warm. And there was some kind of thing where like this is like none of my business, but you know, it's like you roll calls. So you've got the agent, you're supposed to sit there and listen and end the call. Like when they say, okay, you can hang up now. And so I was like, I can't remember exactly the circumstances, but like, he just really wanted to make another Mummy. He was like, when are we going to make another Mummy? And I just thought he was so adorable. And it was just so sweet to hear him. He loved the experience of working on those movies. And like, there was just something so sweet and funny and childlike about him being like, is that on the table? Like, can we make another? And I just thought he was darling. So I thought you would enjoy knowing that I had a very positive association on a personal level with
that particular person. I do. I feel even more so welcome. Connected.
You're so welcome. Next category, let's get into some romance.
Okay.
Three people, don't care if they're characters, creatures, fictitious, real, any era, any age you want them to have been. Like if they're 11D now, but you wish they were, you know, 35, their 35-year-old self, it's up to you.
Okay. So, of course, because Bridgerton is in my mind right now, I'm going to put Mr. Simon Hastings, the Duke of...
Duke Hastings.
Duke Hastings. That's my one. Number two would be... it can be real or fake, right?
Yeah, 100%. Okay.
Henry Cavill, because that's my imaginary love of my life. Been following that man's career for a while.
Nice.
Love him.
Yeah,
and
he's great.
And my third one, who is a good third? Damn it, I would say, I'm going to say him mostly because I did have a huge crush on him from the books, not the TV show, but Bill Compton from the Sookie Stackhouse series.
Oh, sure.
Vampire great. Bill.
Did you feel like when you saw the series where you're like, him? Like, that's who you guys cast? Did it feel like it made sense?
I think he did a pretty good job. I thought he did a pretty good job as Bill. Though there were times when he would speak, his British accent would actually slip out.
Oh, yeah. And he struggled.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I'm an air snob in that, because, as you know, like, I like hearing people talk, listen to languages and dialects, so I would hear that and go, tighten it up, sweetheart. But
yeah, same.
I think he did, like, a really good job of transforming Bill from the way that they had him in the book to on the show, but then the show itself just started going off the rails by, like, the season four. And the thing about that killed me was that the books are supernatural and, like, wonky and weird enough that they did not have to add all the extra added BS that they added to the show. It's like you got enough source material to go in a million and one directions than to go the way they went. So after that,
it definitely went campy, like real campy.
Yeah. So that's why I got to say book Bill Compton versus TV show.
Bill Compton, copy that.
Yes.
Okay. Next category, three foods that you can have. Unlimited, zero ramifications, no such thing as allergies, no such thing as harming animals. It's all somehow this like perfect utopic version of the food.
Okay. My favorite foods are casino clams. I love those, even though I don't get to eat them often. So casino clams. Great. This dish that my mom makes, which is smoked herring with dal, which is just like boiled split peas and rice. That's been my favorite dish from birth. And the third thing that I love to eat is I love to eat like pasta, cheesy pasta.
So like, oh, sure.
Yeah, so anything that's like a cheesy.
I just put cheesy pasta. Yeah, cheesy you had pasta. Me a cheesy like pasta.
Any cheesy pasta dish.
Yes, indeed. 100% agree. Okay. Next one, let's do alternate universe careers. We'll imagine only the good, unless it's important to you to include the bad. But otherwise, just whatever it feels like it would be amazing about those careers. Three.
Okay, so I'm going to say archaeology because that's technically an alternate universe.
I mean, that's the reason that I brought that category up, right. So don't insult me.
So archaeology would be one. Another one, alternate universe. I feel like if I was living on Earth B-52, I'd probably be like some marketing exec on that universe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then in... another universe, I think I would be like a hardcore, like DNA scientist, I don't even know how to describe that, but yes, I think I'm just
hardcore DNA scientist.
Yes.
I love it.
Or a scientist who just specializes in DNA and replication or mutations or whatever.
Great. DNA scientist. Great. Maybe I should have you tutor me in just stuff that I wish I would have listened harder in school, and you can just like help me. Okay, next one. Now, this was like, I'm basing this off of one quick thing you said, but mama doesn't forget.
Yes.
I want you to give me the loose setting, possibly theme, but at least where you know you would set it, or like a circumstance where you'd set it. Three different eroticas
that I know of, or where
no, that you would
them.
Write.
That
yeah,
I would
like
write.
That you would write. Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
like yeah.
Okay. So I would write. Okay. So I would write erotica.
In this case, you have written like oh these were three
yeah, so
amazing.
I
like
have
you,
written.
Yeah.
I have written. it's like romance erotica for like. Like, I don't want to say moms, but like mom erotica.
Great. Mom erotica.
Mom
doing
erotica.
It.
I would write BDSM erotica.
Great.
And I would write like romantic escapist erotica.
Great. Okay, great. All of which may amass a fortune for you. Okay. Okay. Next one. I'm sorry. I'm laughing at this because this is I'm just indulging myself and like creating categories that I want for me based off of your interests. Yeah. So it's getting a little silly. But I want you to pick. Maybe I'll just include myself. Mm-hmm. You and I are going to go on three different kinds of treasure hunts. Mm. Could be anywhere in the world. Where are we and what are we searching for?
Ooh, okay. So,
and it doesn't have to be based in any real like
any
treasure
real
situation.
Place.
You could be like a famous countess in Venice in the 1700s. Like, it could be just completely made up, but just like a thing that sounds like it'd be fun and like adrenaline filled to be like, yeah. Oh my God, the back of this map is actually also a map, but it's a different map.
So for me, one would be, which is actually one thing that I wanted to do, and I knew it was going to be a fantasy either way, but was fine. Right. We're going to find the actual tomb of the real Imhotep, because there was a real
Great.
Imhotep, and no one has found him yet.
Great.
The other dig that we would do, or treasure hunt we will do, would be in like the, I guess what would that be? Like the southeast coast of the U.S. So I guess like near or around Florida. We're looking for the Fountain of Youth because no one has found it yet.
Oh, great.
And the other treasure would be the other treasure hunt. I see us somewhere in like the desert area of Mongolia seeking like an ancient jade artifact.
Oh, I love it. Great, great.
Getting all my Lara Croft on.
I'm there.
I used to love me some Lara Croft.
Oh my God. Of course you did. I mean, that totally makes sense. That's perfect. Okay, great. Okay. And then final, three, let's do three different like badass skills that one of which you will get that would be very useful in this life of adventure.
Mm. Okay. Fighting. Number one. My hand is some kind of combat skills.
Great.
Rock climbing and agility. Like you have to have some kind of agility in here.
Yeah. Good point. I could really use more. Just in regular life, I could yes, stand to not like be walking through a doorway, turn around to look at something and just slam into the doorway itself with my shoulder. Like, what? Janet, you were almost through.
Almost
you were
through
almost
the
through
door.
The doorway and somehow you managed to like dislocate your shoulder. How did that happen? That was the last category. I'm so excited to get these results. You know, you want me to do a little doodle, like the quick little doodle that okay. So you tell me when to stop.
Okay.
Yeah. Here I go. Now.
Stop.
Okay. Great. I drew an ankh.
Nice.
It felt like the right thing to do. Okay.
Me and my inner child, thank you so much.
I'm more than happy to have obliged. Okay, so while I do this, will you please tell people about Adultish and anything else you would like people to know about you, like your jewelry?
Absolutely. So yes, for those of you who are listening, I run a podcast called The Adultish Podcast with my good friend Vincent Bernard. It is an ongoing conversation about being an adult in the conventional sense as we know it, as well as the way in which we're living it, mostly with Black millennials. You can find us on Adultish on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Adultish P0DCAST. I also have an online boutique called Pretty Poet Inc. You can find some of my handmade jewelry with a nerd girl flair. They're available for sale at prettypoetink.com. And last but not least, as I mentioned, I'm getting back into writing. So you can go ahead and check out my blog where I deconstruct Disney movies as well as talk about a bunch of nerd girl stuff at aljatherwriter.com. And if you'd like to find me, you can hit me up on Instagram at alja0214 or Instagram at lajoliepoeta. That's LAJOLIEPOETA.
Timed that out so perfectly. I just circled the last thing as you were spelling that. That was
awesome.
Sublime. I am real excited about this. Okay. Oh, that reminds me that I know, but when we spoke, you were like, and I can do something custom. And then
yes.
I was like, oh, I want to do something custom because that is more personal.
Yes.
And then I just haven't thought of what that is. So I might turn it back on you and say, I want you to do a custom piece that you feel in some way in your heart reflects this conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's very exciting to me.
Yes.
Okay. I could not be more excited about the outcome of this match game. Oh, it's real positive. It's real, real positive. Look, first of all, I'm going to say I couldn't be less surprised that your venture into Momrotica, as I've now called it,
yes,
has yielded the fortune for you that it has.
Yes.
But it certainly has. There's just a lot of really good stuff going on here. So not only did you do that, but you're also an ace badass DNA scientist.
Nice.
So I feel like, I don't know, one of those is more of a hobby. You're such a genius that you could be that the DNA science is the hobby. I don't even know.
I do on the side. Yeah. I work with women occasionally.
Well, let me go ahead and tell you where you're going to be able to use that. However, perhaps in your travels back to ancient Egypt.
Ooh. There we go.
That's some mitochondrial DNA
that
shit.
Is some
right there.
DNA shit. Right.
I don't know why I'm being so defensive, like I'm arguing a case in court and you're my opponent. No. I really slammed my hand against the pad like I was angry. Okay. So super excited about that. There's going to be some adventure there. I think we can both agree. I know there's going to be adventure when you and I are in the middle of Mongolia, where I feel like we could be in the desert. But I also foresee maybe a part of it going into the mountains and the snow. It's going to be all over that area looking for a very prized piece of historic jade artifact. Very excited about that. perhaps when you are done with the arid climate of Mongolia, you'll be excited to go to your vacation home in Rivendell.
Oh, I would love it.
Yeah.
The elves are so common yeah. there.
Yeah. I love the idea of you eating casino clams in Rivendell. There's something very funny about that to me.
It is.
Very, very satisfying. But I want you to rest assured, if anyone tries to wrestle those clams away from you in Rivendell or elsewhere, your fighting skills are going to make sure they are not touched with those clams.
That's right.
Not today.
Not today,
not
Legolas.
Today.
Not today.
That's right. That's right. Okay. P.S. It's a mansion. Did I mention it is a mansion not in me. Rivendell? So not bad. I guess that only leaves us with, we've covered all of his other fabulous outcomes. You are sharing this with Simon Hastings, the Duke himself.
Yes.
I'm extremely envious yet very excited for you. This is a pretty lovely. Choice MASH game. Like
that is amazing.
I feel like you got the best of it all. Am I wrong? I mean,
that is
because
amazing.
Like you get like, oh, you didn't get archaeology, but by the way, you get to go to ancient Egypt, and so you're still doing archaeology.
I'm still
like you're
there.
Just doing the mitochondrial DNA
just
stuff
doing
that
this
you.
Stuff. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That is.
This has been so much fun. I'm so glad it finally happened.
I'm so glad it happened too.
What a treat. I very much hope that we get to see each other in person.
Absolutely. Really
in a safe environment on either coast.
Yes.
It's been so weird not traveling. I really miss going to New York, so I hope that that will happen.
Absolutely.
Within this year. And yeah. I'm gonna buy a lovely meal for Vincent, you and me.
Yes. Some cheesy pasta
all day long, all day long. I would, you know what? I'd stretch that out into risotto if
ooh,
that's the
yes,
right kind of
yes.
place too, because that's just like delicious,
yes,
delicious, deliciousness. Please, everyone, check out all of the wonderful things that Afia is up to, and everyone stay safe, and I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.